morning. I'd like to call this city workshop to order. It is Tuesday, December 8, 2020. It is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland?
Here.
Vice Mayor Branquino?
Here.
Councilmember Barbosa?
Here.
Councilmember Danko?
Here.
Councilmember Clupas?
Present.
Mayor, all members are present.
Thank you. We'll now open up to public participation. Any member of the public wish to make public comments? You have up to 3 minutes. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Can I pull the mask down?
Yes.
Okay. Steve Carr, Palm Coast. For over 10 years now, I've brought before the City Council the problem of the excessive traffic on Florida Park Drive. Traffic being Florida Park Drive being used as a thoroughfare to exchange traffic between two parkways, Palm Coast Parkway and Palm Harbor. And all the health organizations have done numerous studies about harm to the body from the fumes, the dust, the noise. And I think 10 years is a little long to keep bringing this back up all the time. So a new study is out. It says a team of immunologists, experts, has determined for the first time that nano-sized particles found in traffic fumes can damage the immune system's ability to kill viruses and bacteria. We just went through the COVID virus thing. So we, as residents over there, we want our health protected. And that's what we're asking. Please do something to reduce the amount of traffic. I know that the city has looked at doing something called striping for traffic calming. Well, striping calming won't, if you do all the studies on all the different traffic calming methods, striping is not going to drastically reduce the amount of traffic. We would like to see what we call the soft speed humps that will help reduce the amount of traffic and protect us from speeding every day. Speeding on Florida Park Drive is every day. So I would like to see the city's council approach that as this is a health problem for us. What are you planning to do to protect our health? Anybody can go out to Google and key in health problems with close proximity traffic to your homes. We're 60 feet from that one. From the road. There's 8,300 cars a day according to FDOT. That's way too much traffic to go through a residential area. We need help over there. So that's what I'm asking. Please give us some help on that. And I have a handout for you. Thank you.
Your comments. Next speaker.
Robert MacDonald, Palm Coast. A couple of weeks ago, I came to a council meeting and I brought up some comments, but something happened after I left that has totally disgusted me. And I'm here to publicly express my displeasure and my disgust in what happened. And the incident was where Councilman Danko and Councilman Barbosa got into a battle back and forth. Gentlemen, this is the city of Palm Coast. This is not a playground. You're not 8 years old. You both ran on the platform of doing a better job for the betterment of all of the people of the city of Palm Coast. We're going to disagree with each other. Trust me, Mayor Holland knows that I disagree with her constantly. But I respect her because she's the mayor of the city. And I'm hoping that under your administration and your term as councilman, we will learn to respect you. So yes, you will have differences of opinion, but you don't make them public. You don't bring your dirty laundry out. You don't embarrass this city. We put you there to do a job to protect all of the people. You leave your attitudes and your opinions at the door. You don't bring them in this room. You're supposed to be professionals. Act like them. You're supposed to be grown-ups. Act like them. Don't embarrass the 100,000 people who put you in this office. Come on, guys. Step up. Do the right thing.
Your comments. Next speaker.
Good morning. My name's Bob Gilfillan. I'm a resident of Covington Park subdivision, which is adjacent to the Palm Harbor Golf Course. And I'm here. My home's within 300 foot of the item that you're going to be discussing today for the cell tower located at the golf course maintenance shed. And I want to express concern about this and opposition as a resident. And I don't know if you're going to take action on it today or if you're going to just discuss it, but we're opposed to it, many of our neighbors, and I just want to make mention of a letter that was sent to you. I don't know if you received it from Lou Viteri, also a resident, opposing the proposed cell tower. So we just want to be on record again concerning this.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Hello, my name is William Bellick. I live at the Oaks near the, that's a development near the proposed cell tower.
Excuse me.
And I'd like to, I guess you all have got the letter, and I'm in favor of a independent research by Vitatech Electromagnetics to perform a cellular tower impact analysis and assessment of the proposed 150-foot cellular tower on the properties within Covington Park and the Oaks and other nearby neighborhoods. Nobody was really told about this. It's a pretty big project, and I know that I think it's 300 feet. Within 300 feet of our proposed property, I'm supposed to have notice. Well, this is a pretty big project here, and I believe that everybody should have been notified about. You know, a lot of radio waves, I don't know. We need to have an environmental impact study on this. On what's going to do to our neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker. Okay, we'll close public comment. Just a couple things to note, Mr. McDonald, I believe the issue you were speaking of was an issue between Councilmember Branquino, or Vice Mayor Branquino, and Councilmember Danko, not Barbosa, so I just wanted to correct that for the record, but your comments are noted. And for the two gentlemen that came up to speak about the cell phone, this is a workshop, so no action will be taken today. And this is not a business meeting. So this item will be presented to us as a council today, and your issues are on the record as well. Thank you. Okay, we'll now move forward with agenda item number E1, which is a presentation of the State of Palm Coast Connect.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Good morning. I think we're going to pull up our slideshow if you give us a minute. So we wanted to take the opportunity to discuss this morning, go through and sort of raise awareness of what we've been doing. And of course, we're talking today about Palm Coast Connect, and we hope to give you a comprehensive analysis, but also the understanding that it's more than just an app. We heard that term tossed around a lot. It's an app. It's more than an app. And what we're using Palm Coast Connect for is a complete tool, and the tool is allowing us unprecedented access that the city's never had before to managerial insights, to real-time workflow. And the result of that is that it's driven accountability and performance, and not just from myself, not just from the management team, but what we've seen is now that employees, every employee with a smart device and access has the same dashboards and the same data that we have, they can see their own performance. They can see their own workload in real time, and this theory of gamification of work has really taken hold, and we're seeing, you know, friendly competitions and the search for greater efficiencies. When they can see on their device, hey, why is it taking employee X 20 minutes to complete a pep tank work order, and for another employee or two, it may be 40 minutes, what are they doing that is creating that efficiency? And they're learning amongst themselves how to bring those times and those response times down. And I think there's two things in that paradigm that we have to understand that Palm Coast Connect has brought to the city. And one is that success is not an accident, and winning is not an accident. It takes a lot of planning, it takes a lot of design, it takes a lot of intentionality and creativity. To use a sports analogy, no team goes out on the field just hoping by accident they're going to win a football game. There are plays scripted, there are coaching, there is review of tapes, there is analysis that goes into how are we going to get better at what we do. And so to do that, we created an internal team. I know you've heard me talk about it before, and it's the innovation triangle, kind of appointed three people to lead our efforts to modernize our approach and enhance our citizen engagement. And one is Blake Kershaw, who's sitting here, and he's our research and development head. One is Steve Harris, our director of implementation and architecture, whose real skill is problem solving, going out, meeting with employees and teams and understanding the needs directly and then bringing them back to the city for action. And then Cynthia Swearge, who used to be our customer service manager and now is our director of citizen engagement. All three positions intentionally designed to serve a very specific purpose of increasing transparency, efficiency, and accountability. So what does that really mean? What does that mean for us? So transparency. This is happening both internally, as I had noted, and it's citizen-facing. Internally, we're breaking silos, which is the first time that's happened, where we've got folks from every team looking at problems, understanding how we're solving that problem, and then what that applicability is across the city to make sure we're learning from our own mistakes and we're being consistently responsive to the citizens. We've talked, there's nothing worse than getting a call and getting transferred 9 times to get an answer. That should not happen, so it's helping us. As a team, it's giving us insights and data that are helping us, again, collectively align around our common mission of delivering outstanding service to our community. And just as importantly, it's giving our citizens access to data, to projects, and operational details they've never had access to before. And you heard me talk in one of the updates I did a few weeks ago about the two draft portals that have been created. One is access to every land use project in the city vis-a-vis a map, and you can see in real time what people have applied for, what stage they're in, where they're at, how they are in relationship to you. And similarly, we've got a similar project with stormwater to understand where the stormwater crews are. Has your work order been received? Is it in process? Is it waiting? So we're opening that. We're opening everything up as much as we can to the public. The second thing is accountability. As I mentioned, we've created a power users group. That was the Innovation Triangle team's approach. And for the first time, again, we're bringing all of our talent to bear to solve problems outside of silos so we can improve our operations, we can improve our responses, and we can get more consistent in serving our community and being accountable to our community. And lastly, it's efficiency. I mentioned that gamification theory. We've seen it in utility. We've seen it in public works. We've seen it on the tree crew. Marvin Calderon's going to be here to talk about it today, this gaming efficiency and the insights. It used to take approximately 7 days to complete pre-Palm Coast Connect for us to complete a work order on the tree crew. With the opportunity to track our crews, to plan our work day, to understand work orders and workflow, to have that accountability and visibility for the crews themselves to be able to see what they're doing, we've gotten that time down to about an average of 1.2 days. Now, what did that allow us to do? That doesn't mean they're sitting there not doing work. As part of our Palm Coast Connect platform, we were able to create, a tracking system. We know where the crews are. A tree crew goes in, and they happen to be near an area where there's a pothole or a guardrail that needs to get fixed or another work order. They will take care of it while they're there because geographically it's efficient, timing-wise it's efficient. Something we had talked about for a while, adding this what we call fast response crew to make sure we're addressing specific citizen concerns very quickly. We did it without having to add a single staff person. There's no budget that needed to get created. I didn't have to add additional people, create additional line items for expense. It goes back to this theme with the innovation triangle, with our use of Salesforce, a couple things are happening. We're able to use the time, the talent, and the resources we already own and already control to continue to improve how we do things. Marvin's going to talk about that today a little bit. Whereas in the past, we had to go out, we had to get a vendor, we had to get a contractor, we had to write a check, we had to bring a specialist in, we try to make the system work. Now they go to Blake, they go to Steve, they go to Cynthia, and they say, this is how we need to track this element. This is how we need to understand our workflow. And it is literally in a matter of an hour on simple changes. They're up, they're running, they're implemented. So with that, I wanted to introduce the magic behind the team, or behind this effort, not the team. So we have today, we have Blake Kershaw, again, our head of research and development, Steve Harris, our implementation and architecture director, Cynthia Swears, our customer service, customer engagement manager, and appearing by Zoom today to talk about how it's impacting day-to-day the real work that they're doing out of Public Works, as Marvin Calderon.
Hi, good morning, Mayor and City Council. Like Mr. Morton said, I'm Steve Harris, the Director of Implementation and Architecture. Say that five times fast. A little bit about me. I got hired back in March. 2 weeks after I got hired, we went into lockdown for COVID. So I really haven't been able to be face-to-face with a lot of people yet, so it's nice to be here, finally seeing some of you in person for once. I'm very passionate about the Salesforce platform and Palm Coast Connect. I'm a five-time certified Salesforce holder. I'm seven-time Salesforce Trailhead Ranger. I am the founder and co-leader of the Salesforce Daytona Beach User Group and a board member of the Salesforce Trailblazer Community event, Florida Dreamin'. So I do have a lot of passion for Salesforce. And I used it at my last two previous companies before coming to the city of Palm Coast. But primarily, it's to get, we want to clear the air of what Palm Coast really is and what it does for the city. Palm Coast Connect is not an app for the first thing. You can download an application on your phone, but that's like the beginning of the top of the iceberg, so to speak, of what's actually going underneath the foundation. And the foundation is the Salesforce platform with the Field Service Lightning and the Palm Coast Connect Community Cloud tied in all together to give us a real basic run of all of our operations and our case management and work orders for our residents. And what this is Salesforce platform is a CRM, so our customer relationship management tool. And that sets on top of our ERP system. It's not here to replace anything. It's here solely to save money and provide more efficiency, accountability, and transparency to our residents. With that, we have the Field Service Lightning add-on, which is what it also provides a phone app to access the platform without having a tablet or a computer out in the field. For our stormwater techs, our wastewater techs, our facilities management crew. But this enables the end user to access work orders that get submitted onto Palm Coast Connect, which is basically the front end for the residents. So the resident can come in, log on to Palm Coast Connect via the app on the phone or from a desktop. They can create a case, and that case immediately gets routed to customer engagement or to the primary department that needs to occur to. So from that point, there's no human interaction. It automatically gets driven. So that saves time and money, obviously, for the end users. There's accountability behind that. So now the resident can log in and see the status of their case, who it's been assigned to, when a tech is gonna be out there to work on their pep tank or whatever the concern is. The title of it is Palm Coast Connect, but it's actually the Salesforce platform with Field Service Lightning, all these other smaller apps that tie into our existing systems. It's, like I said, it's not here to replace any system. It's to make all of our systems more efficient and more transparency to break down the silos that we're going through. Brief overview of what the features and capabilities are. It provides us a 360-degree view of the residents and for us and our operations. So ideally, the main goal is the resident can create their case, they can submit for activities that we have, like the fishing tournament that went on over the summer, the holiday light fight that we got on now. They can go in and see all the interactions that they've had within their account on Palm Coast Connect. It provides public knowledge articles, which before, you know, a resident could probably have to call in, be transferred, you know, put on hold, transferred around a few times before getting the answer to the question that they have. Now you can go to Palm Coast Connect and get some of those frequently asked questions answered a lot faster. Provides citizen self-service features, collaborative case management, which is breaking down those silos, the different departments, and having a streamline of our operations. It also provides us some geolocation capabilities, which it interacts into our GIS system, access some of the maps and some of the stormwater projects and capital improvements that we have. It basically connects our service team and our operations to our citizens. And some of that feature is part of our soft phone integration, which is when you call in, and you'll see a video of it a couple slides down, but when a resident calls in, automatically their information of their account comes to screen. And so we can have more of that personal one-on-one interaction with that resident and not just being a number that could have happened in the past or any other organizations. And it provides us all like their necessary information at that point so we can help resolve their issue of what they're calling for. It gives us real-time notifications. It's designed to be paperless. So the idea is everybody has a tablet, a phone, a laptop, which everybody does now in this day and age, and it cuts down and minimizes the need to print out any type of paperwork and cut down on those costs. It's very intuitive for the field technician assignment because it has based into it some artificial intelligence, so it can start learning as we go and become more efficient over time. It's fully customizable, which is really big. We do most of the customizations in-house now, between myself, Cynthia, and Blake. So there's no need to go to an outside consultant. We can do everything much quicker in-house by having our innovation triangle. And it's automated reporting. So we can, before the data, you had to keep it in Excel spreadsheets and pass it around. Now you can get automated reports emailed to you, dashboards that are live data, so we can get a full idea of what's going on in the city at any time. How does Palm Coast Connect fit into our technology ecosystem? Like I said, it's built kind of as, if you look at our entire ecosystem, as a triangle. So the very tip of that triangle is what the residents interact with, which is Palm Coast Connect. It's a CRM site that anybody can contact, go on, find the information about the city, and create cases and concerns. And that sits on top of our mid-level systems, which could be what we use Centrality, OnBase, our ERP system of Munis, CD Plus, and that also integrates in with the Field Service Lightning app, which is the Salesforce application that sits in for our outside service teams. So all this information and these layers sit on top of our foundation, which is our ERP, our Enterprise Resource Planning System, which is currently Munis that Doug and Blake brought to council a couple weeks ago to discuss. So it's not going to replace anything. It's just here to make everything more efficient, tie everything together, and break down as many silos as possible so we can become more efficient for the residents going forward. So during the election season, there was a lot of back and forth of what this is that it costs the citizens. And here's a breakdown of what the cost is in our current contract. $104,515. Divide that out by approximately 87,600 citizens, and that gives you $1.19 per citizen per year, less than 10 cents a month. So for about what you find laying a dime on the street somewhere, that's what's costing the city to run this platform, to make us more efficient and to break down the silos and help our residents out as much as possible. What are we getting for our money? We're getting more autonomy and flexibility, like Mr. Morton said. Our call volume is down with the case deflection, and Cynthia will be going over that in more detail of how that By having access online versus calling in, how more efficient this platform provides us. And our average handling time per call has dramatically reduced, along with our resolution for time per citizen's case down. So like Mr. Morton said, it could have been 7 days before for a work order to be closed. Now it can be closed in a matter of hours or up to a day. I think it's about the longest it's occurring since we've had this platform. And with this slide, I'll turn it over to Blake.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. As Mr. Morton has said, this is more than just an app. It's about improving communications and citizen engagement. In the last year, our online services have been accessed by approximately 550,000 users. That's 550,000 business owners, citizens, builders, developers, and visitors, all engaging the city for information. I think it is great that we have the support of the city manager and council committed to citizen engagement and enabling us the opportunity to provide online services to the community. A big improvement within the last year that we were able to implement was an enhancement to the way in which we handle after-hour calls for service, such as pep tank alarms. In the past, this was a very manual and arduous process. We were able to greatly improve this process by integrating requests that are submitted after hours to automatically text message on-call city staff the necessary information to handle and service that call. This was a big win for the customer, for the on-call staff, and the city. But we didn't stop there. We went one step further and created a custom front-end process for the Sheriff's Office dispatchers. This enabled them to immediately log after-hour calls for service, which creates a case and sends a text message to the after-hour staff that's on call. Not only did this provide great efficiency, but it eliminated the need for paper processes and assisted the Sheriff's Office dispatchers in more efficiently handling our after-hour calls. I don't want to take too much of Cynthia's thunder, but I really want to emphasize that every phone call, email, and case created is tracked every step of the way. And in fact, Cynthia takes a lot of time and pride in her team's dashboards and metrics. The point is that customer service, utilities, public works, and other departments have greatly benefited from these metrics and empowering management staff to make business decisions with proven collected data. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Cynthia, and she's going to kind of highlight some of her team's areas and expertise. I didn't take too much of your thunder.
No, that's okay. I'll go into it, but... he's right. One of the things that we've really strived upon, and I'll kind of go right into it, is that, you know, customer service has kind of gone into a totally different outlook. I've been here for 16 years, and, you know, we started with a 6-person call center, and now we're 16. So we've grown over the years, added more, and one of the things that we've done is over the years is, you know, our traditional work order, we would take a call, create a work order, and we'd go out to the field, and we really wouldn't know the end result. We were lucky if we got it back, completed it, and the resident, we hoped the resident got the notification back, but we weren't sure. I feel like this year we've turned that around where we've become a citizen engagement center, where from start to finish, we're in communication with the resident. Even down to the fact that once they submit a case, we're going to go over a video in a few minutes about before and after of the process. And we've been able to, every step of the way, be with the resident until the finished product and evaluate it. We've actually even added a survey option at the end. And we've taken that survey to another level where now, internally, we've actually created a super user group. And it's made up of an individual from each department. We meet on a regular basis, and what we're doing is we're going over those surveys that are below a 3. We want to know whether it was a work process that we need to improve, whether, you know, we didn't educate the resident, whether it was something that was controllable or uncontrollable, you know, something that maybe needed to come to council. So now we're able to drill in and really get that experience with the resident to another level and help them through that process. And the 16 years I've been here, we've never, you know, we've tried to focus on it, but now with the technology, we're able to really, really take it to another level. As you can see with the call center productivity, I mean, 38% of our cases coming in are from the app, whether they're going to submitting it through the website or they're going on their phone, which is great. You know, the technology is changing, and more people want to use their phone or use the internet, and they, you know, not necessarily want to call, which is fine. You still have that percentage that do want to call, so we want to make sure that we're managing it all through this CRM system. And by doing that, it's helping us kind of manage the entire process, start to finish, and seeing where we need improvements. And I think that's helping us tremendously. And by saving the resident time, one example the other day, we got busy and I jumped on the phones and talked to a resident, and she was at work. She was like, my pep alarm's going off, my kids are at home, can you do a work order? Okay, we did a work order, we did a case, dispatched it out. I said, she said, how do I know it's completed? So I said, all right, give me your email, and you'll get an email notification through the whole process. Within 30 minutes, she called back and says it was already worked on. Like, she was amazed by the fact that she knew, and the kids didn't even know. They went in and out and fixed the pep tank, and, you know, that engagement with the resident, it took us to another level, and the resident was very, very satisfied and was impressed with the new process. So it's really, really took us to another level that we never thought we would be, and I'm kind of happy we're going in that direction. It's accountability that we never had, so we're very excited about it. One of the things we've been able to do is engage with our residents in another way, where, you know, we've really, really focused on citizen engagement with Palm Coast Connect, and one of the things that we've done is different things throughout the year. COVID hit us, and it was very unexpected. So we switched and figured out ways to be innovative. Virtual town hall meetings were phenomenal. If you look at YouTube and look at all the views, I mean, they're from 700 to thousands of people viewed those virtual town hall meetings. And, you know, we answered over 848 questions. I think that's phenomenal. I mean, that's amazing to be able to answer those questions in a time of need and be able to do that, register, and have a success through Palm Coast Connect on doing that. Virtual recreation programs was another one. I know Lauren's on, and she'd probably tell us that how many people we transitioned that recreation program to virtual, and I know my kids were on there listening, and they loved it. It was really a tremendous process. I know the annual photo contest, we had about 223 people submit for that photo contest. Another thing that was huge that we've been working on is our email notifications alerts. One of the things that we had over the years is that a water main break would happen in an area. And we would get, it's uncontrollable. So at that circumstances, we would get an alert to have to, and we get all these calls. So now we're able to use the Salesforce platform and geolocate it. So I can pull the street up and actually highlight the street, upload it, send an email to them. We're also even working on doing an automatic call out and looking at possible text messaging. So all that innovative ways of communicating with our resident is kind of taking us to another level, and residents are liking it. I mean, as you can see, that 38%, a lot of people are just using that. They're no longer calling because they get that accountability and that end result right in their email. So it's fun stuff. As you can see, I'm passionate about it because I like to see that engagement with the resident. I'm a Palm Coast resident, so when I see it and, I try to look at it at a different perspective and kind of understand what, as a resident, what I want to see, and I see that we're improving that process for everybody. So I want to talk a little bit about Field Service Lightning. Steve and Blake and them talked about a little bit, but one of the things that, as I was here over the years, is that we knew we needed to work on a paperless process. And one of the things that Field Service Lightning brought was that automatic service appointment availability. I always kind of look at you deal with AT&T and you get an alert on when they're going to show up, a time frame. You're kind of part of that process through start to finish. And one of the things that Field Service Lightning allows us to do that. It's that accountability. I'm going to show two videos after this of kind of what our process was and how we improved it. And it's night and day. You can actually see the improvements. You can see, it was amazing to see building this process. with our wastewater department, and that was the first department that we transitioned over to Field Service Lightning, to see their faces on how easy it was and how the transition. They were old school. I mean, we'd print out a work order and dispatch it out to the technicians, and you'll see that process, and then they would complete it, handwrite the results. There was times where during storms we would get, you know, hundreds and hundreds of work orders for PEP alarms. I'd look over at utilities. I remember we used to work after hours, and we'd stacks of work orders. We'd sit there and be completing them as the guys were pumping them down. We wanted to get to look at that. We wanted to streamline. We wanted to get some of that overtime down and look at the process. One of the things that, you know, we looked at budgets and said, oh my goodness, we're going over on our budget every year on overtime. So we have to streamline this process and figure out how we can save money and how we can make it quicker for management, quicker for the field tech, the dispatcher, even down to the resident getting notification, not just getting a door tag. So one of the things we implemented was Field Service Lightning. It was actually up and running last January, and they were our first department. When we implemented them, it was about a duration time of 40 minutes. We've cut it down to 20. It's probably even gone down even more from the time we did this presentation. They have streamlined this process tremendously. They have cut down on their overtime. So it's been phenomenal to see that the field techs love the process. As you can see in here, it tells them what time they're going to show up, even gives them directions to where the site is. So it's really, really taken it. It's given the power in the hands of the workers in the field so that they can control it and they can see what they're doing. And basically the app even gives them the ability to streamline things, how many pumps were replaced, floats, so we can track all of it and we can have it for future budgeting as well. So I want to kind of go into a quick video of how the process was before.
Thank you for calling the City of Palm Coast. My name is Alyssa. How may I assist you today? Yes, may I have your property address? All right, and bear with me one moment while I pull that up.
As you can see the call coming in, she has no concept of what the caller's name,
and I'm
the
showing
telephone
that
number
under
or
Smith.
Anything.
Is that
the
correct?
The only thing we have is we're going to ask them for the address because that's
perfect.
The only
bear with me one moment.
We can bring it up in the system. The old process was very time consuming. As you can see, step by step, she had to go through each field to actually even create a work order that was going to be sent over to our utility department. And this is where customer service is.
And are you having
with
any
call
issues
center,
inside the home?
Utilities that we couldn't communicate, where they
all
have
right.
A printer over there
bear
that we had to print
over
email over there to get them to dispatch. So you'll see that process.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll go ahead and get that sent over to dispatch. They'll visit the location, and somebody will be to the home. You don't have to be there. We'll leave a tag on the front door, so when you get back home, you'll know if we were there. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
So from that stage, she actually even has to open it up in a PDF and email it over to the dispatcher over at utility. So multiple steps. Where a lot of that, you know, is time that we're spending where we could get to the next call. So we knew there was some issues on that aspect that we wanted to streamline. So once it goes over, this, you know, it gets printed, old school printer. And then we dispatch it out to the field technician out the field. And each guy would be in a certain area.
U80 to U90.
Cover that area.
We have a priority one at 40 Pitt Lane.
And obviously the field guy will go out there and perform the maintenance. Again, you know, we dispatched it out, so actually he would be logging it on a log. And at the end of the day, he can then log in, and then we'd have to match it up with the work orders. So a lot of steps where a lot of areas where we need to improve. So let's talk about the new process.
Thank you for calling the City of Palm Coast. My name is Alyssa. How may I assist you today?
as you can see, as soon as the call came up, a pop-up screen came up in front of her, and it automatically brought that information for that resident up if they were already in the system. Pull from the utility, so majority of the system
are you having any issues
connected to the utility bills? And this is a prime example
would you like to
of having
email notifications
one stop
as your case
where everything
progresses?
Is. So our goal was to have someone call in.
Perfect.
And
I see that we have your email address on file already. Would you like, is that where you'd like to receive your alerts?
So we'd be able to help
all
them
right.
that.
We'll
and
go ahead and put that in. You have
a
wonderful day.
Where it's a case work order. She's going through it, and it's, I mean, tremendously night and day. We already have a telephone number. We have an email on file. If they didn't, we can update it. That's how quick. Then we have a dispatcher. Dispatcher is actually seeing what guys are in the field. In the Salesforce Field Service Lightning, we're able to see who's the closest to that area so that we can map it out and be more efficient. And as soon as he drags and drops, the technician gets an alert on his app, brings it up. It'll give him directions if he needs to go get directions to where it is. Once he's there, he does the work. He can actually put in the app how many pumps were replaced, how many wires, all that. As soon as he hits complete on the app, the resident gets a notification that the work was done, okay? So start to finish. That's why it's so important that we get their telephone number or email address in order to show that. It's not going to work. Okay. So one of the things, so as you can see, night and day, I mean, we've streamlined it so much in the new process that the guys are happy. The techs are just amazed by the process. The resident is getting that accountability. We're able to be transparent in the community and also in management. One of the things that was the last slide, but I skipped through it, was the reporting aspect and the dashboards. So one of the things that we would do is we would have to manually count how many pumps. We would have to manually figure out how many pep tanks and do a lot of Excel spreadsheets. Now with having this ability, as soon as they complete that work order, we're having dashboards on demand, weekly, daily, monthly. And now the wastewater management is able to track monthly if they need to order ahead, if they need to, order less. They can see how long it's taking for a field tech to actually complete the work. One of the things we were able to say is it's taking 2 hours, 3 hours for different individuals, and we're able to use it as a tool for training. They've even taken it to that level where they've been able to kind of narrow down and say, okay, what's going on? Why is it taking so long to go out there? Maybe we can train a little bit more to take less time off of it. So we've been able to use the dashboards in so many different ways. It's telling that story and giving that accountability of what they're doing in the field, which has been tremendous. And I feel like one of the things that we strived upon was trying to find where we can improve in certain areas, and we've definitely done that. Right from there, we were able to, we got wastewater up and running. They loved it. And we went into Public Works. Public Works was some area where they were using the old school munis, and they didn't have the reporting capability. There was a lot of things that they were missing. So they asked to be in Salesforce in the Field Service Lightning. We implemented them quite a few months ago. I think it's been about 6 months. I do have Marvin here to talk a little bit about what his experience was, because they actually got all their divisions up. They're close to getting fleet, and facilities was just done. And they're all in the app, and they were able to kind of see a lot of transition on reporting and response time that Mr. Morton talked about earlier, and I think it worked out really good, and he can talk a little bit about it. I don't know if you want to bring him up. Can you unmute him?
The Zoom.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Go back
yep.
to the slide, though.
We can hear you.
All right. Good morning, Mayor and Council.
Good morning.
In the month of June, our department began to implement Salesforce into our daily operations. During that month, we were able to gather key data that allowed us to begin to make changes in the way we were handling incoming citizen concerns. Using the information we gathered, we decided to focus on two main points. Like Mr. Morton mentioned earlier, the two points we wanted to focus on was on how we were distributing the work orders and how quickly we were responding to the concerns. The distribution part of the work order system was immediately improved when we switched over to Salesforce. We went from using a system that required phone calls and paper to just a simple click and drag of a work order to the employee that could address the concern the fastest. When we looked into how quickly we were responding to work orders, we noticed that this area needed more attention than the, how we were distributing the work orders. With the previous system, like Cynthia mentioned, our response time was about 7 to 8 days per work order. We started to explore ways to reduce our response time, and we found a mapping feature on the Salesforce platform that allows us to see where every employee with the Field Service Lightning app is located. This mapping feature allows us to distribute the work order to the employee that is closest to the citizen's concern. Since we started to utilize the mapping feature, we've been able to reduce our response time to 1 to 1.5 days per work order, which has been great. In some cases, we've been receiving work orders, and I've been able to dispatch the work order literally 5 to 10 minutes after we receive it, and we've had somebody over at the concern within an hour. It's been real helpful to have all the data right at our fingertips to make reports and make assessments on which crews can respond to where. Not only has our response time improved, but it's also created a competitive atmosphere among the 8 employees who respond to work orders on a daily basis. They're always trying to outdo each other during the day to see who can get to the work order first. It's almost like a contest to them. They give me daily reports every day on how many work orders they're doing, and they're constantly bragging on who's doing what and who's doing more than the other one. During the upcoming year, our department is going to continue to develop the work order systems for our other divisions, which include facilities and our fleet division. We're looking to track all of the expenditures that we do per individual facility. Same with fleet. We're going to be tracking man hours, labor, PM services to see how we can improve those procedures throughout the year.
Thank you, Marvin. We're going to go back a little bit because one big process that I wanted to touch upon with Steve is the wastewater testing.
Like I mentioned earlier, about 6 years ago, I got involved in the Salesforce ecosystem and learned the product and became very passionate about it because I see the abilities that it can do. And one of the things I'm really excited about here at the City of Palm Coast is the innovation that we're using this for is new innovation. It's breakthrough innovation for us. And one of the ways we did this was during COVID. We partnered with Flagler Health officials and other officials within the city, along with a company called Aqua Vitas out of Phoenix, I believe, or Arizona somewhere. Anyway, we were able to set up water testing samplings through our wastewater department at certain stations throughout the city. And what that helped us do was identify concentrations of COVID, the COVID virus, within wastewater, and be able to plot that out and match that with some of the, or compare that to some of the data that we were bringing in from the state and the county of the amount of COVID cases that we had. So as you can see on this map, we plotted this out through the Salesforce Maps, the platform, and you can see different areas that would show confirmed cases throughout the city. And then in blue is one of the testing areas that we set up at this PSB wastewater site. So that showed a large concentration of the virus in that area, but not very many confirmed cases. So that allowed us to work with the Flagler Health officials to identify and set up mobile testing within those areas. And we did this for, I think, about 11 weeks, 12 weeks, something like that, of different testings. So it's very innovative for us as a city, and very innovative for utilizing the Salesforce platform. And that's where I become very passionate. I work within the Salesforce community quite a bit outside of work. And I have for years, so it's exciting to be able to do innovative creations like this and collaborations with other departments in the area, too.
me again. I'm going to try not to nerd out on this, but I'm a programmer. I write software. I write custom code. Not always is that in a Salesforce engine. We have services running out on the cloud in AWS, and I've had a great privilege to really use code to write some custom integrations and processes for our systems. One of them is Salesforce. I just kind of want to talk about some things that I've done that are just that I think are cool and that have helped not just us, but other municipalities such as the county. Recently, and I hope we never have to use this, but recently we connected the Web EOC platform, which is something that the county uses when they activate for emergency events. So right now, if they activate, essentially when it gets turned on, it starts dumping cases or work orders into our system for our staff out in the field to handle immediately. So if there's a tree down, something that's non-emergency, but that needs to be handled, the county is able to dispatch that to us directly. So that was a really cool a project that I got to work on and implement. Another thing is recently, towards the beginning of this year, I had the great opportunity to work with a local business, Flovac, who predominantly develops vacuum systems for sewage systems and monitoring. So he had this idea to create this IoT device, which is a Internet of Things device, and connect it to a PEP tank. So naturally, I was like, let's do it at my house. So we did. We connected it to the PEP tank at my house, and we were able to track activations, pump run times, alarm triggers, that type of thing. And then I said, well, I'm sure we could connect this right into our CRM tool. And sure enough, started tracking all the data of the pump run times, activations, and then alarms, and create cases, send a text message out to our staff, all automatically. So if it went off, it would just send us a message. So it was just a really cool process to go through. And now he's actually working with Steve Flanagan in the utility department at other applications they can use throughout our infrastructure, monitoring flows on water pipes in areas that they have no idea what the flows are because they can't reach them. There's no power there. We were able to make these discoveries. And so while we're working through that process, it really inspired me to look at some other applications we can use this IoT devices for. And so we're actually looking at things right now for doing some live asset tracking within our CRM tool, park light, the lights at our parks and their operations, light sensors, weather and air quality sensors, and then that's all going to be backed on our fiber network that we already have that infrastructure. Doug, our IT director, is continually encouraging us to develop innovative solutions and support and strides that we are making. He very much wants to see the city become a leader in innovation and has shared this with me, his desires for providing support by educating local students. I think this with the coming of MedNex, will give us that opportunity to be a local technology leader. And at the end of the day, this is about providing essential services rapidly and efficiently. We have big enhancements coming down the pike, and we're looking to implement over the next year. A refreshed website, Palm Coast Connect, a true native mobile app with seamless transition and a single sign-on authentication. And in these next phases, we're hoping to include things like mowing schedule updates, notifications, automated case creation and tracking for keyword comments made across our social media platforms, building inspections and tracking using Field Service Lightning that they've been talking about, providing notification updates for city projects, including stormwater, ditch and swale improvements. We just have a lot of work to do, and we're dedicated and continuously looking for ways in which we can create more accessible services to the community. And with that, I think it's Mr. Morton.
I'll close it out real quick. I know we've taken a lot of time, but back at its core, it's really driven three principles here that we focus on every day, which is transparency in everything we do, both internally and externally, how we get that information, information's power, not only to staff, but to our community. How do we share what we're doing? How do we share where the money's going? How do we share how we're allocating our resources? And we're able to really do that for the first time and make everything accessible to the public and to the internal workings of the city, the different departments, so there's more of an appreciation of what we're doing. Again, it's about that accountability piece, tracking and knowing our efficiencies, conducting the 360 surveys with our citizens, the evaluations, when we have problems, addressing them instead of sitting on them. And we've had great efforts at continually finding problems, challenges, and changes. And of course, making sure, as this council always has wanted us, to be efficient and use the resources we have wisely and for a purpose. So with that, what we are doing is living our mission of delivering exceptional service by making citizens our priority. This all comes to balance on the strategic action plan mission of the City Council, because that is the realization of this community's desires of how they want to see the city advance. And we are leveraging those resources that we have, again, in-house, internally. We're leveraging our efficiency, our resources. We're leveraging that accountability and our customer engagement with this tool and the tools we're creating to make sure we're fulfilling the mission and the goals of the Palm Coast City Council. At the end of the day, this is what this is about, is delivering on the SAP and serving our citizens. So thank you for letting us share with you where we're at.
Comments or questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, Vice Mayor.
Morning, everyone. Usually, IT is not my cup of tea, not my area. Tend to relinquish to the people that we have in the board that actually knows a lot more about it than me. But there was a few things I heard here today that really excited me, that really, you know, show me that you are doing a very, very, very decent job. It's not just a tool. I mean, it's not just an app. It's a tool. Avoids going through 9 people on the phone calls, like you said. Saves money, creates efficiency, and how does it save money? Through time, talent, and resources. When we have a town of less than 100,000 people, you have 550,000 users. Somebody's using this, I would say. If you look pre-Palm Coast Connect and after Palm Coast Connect, I do believe it's night and day. Improve it if you can. This is for the staff. Ms. Sears, keep up your passion, because you've shown that you have it. And citizens should and are our priority. Let's keep it that way, please. Thank you, Mayor.
Any questions or comments, Council? Yes.
After our meeting on December 1st, I went out and asked a couple of people, and everybody that's using it is loving it, and only people that, the people not using it, I showed them, and they started using it, and they loved it too. So keep up the good work. Thank you.
Yes.
I just have a few questions. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, since you mentioned it towards the end, just if you could explain to me, what does tracking keywords on social media mean?
Oh, okay, yeah. So Steve is actually working on, there's some a product within the Salesforce Engine that they're able to connect to the city's Facebook account or Twitter, and it allows them, as comments are made towards things that the city has posted, so if it could be about an event or some other type of communication that they have put out on social media, it automatically logs every one of those comments as a case for staff to hopefully answer and respond to those comments. So it's not so somebody has to continually monitor social media. It will alert them based on keywords and say, hey, this is somebody's asking about an event or you know, so maybe a road closure or something like that. But it's more about keeping everything that a citizen may request or ask about and get them an answer and respond to them promptly. So
okay.
That, yeah.
And another question, we had mentioned without Salesforce and Palm Coast Connect, your call center would need a 30% increase over, I don't know how much time. Are you talking presently or? So if we're saving money there, but I assume we've added additional employees to deal with Palm Coast Connect and Salesforce or not?
No, we were able to actually reallocate our division where we took some people off the phones and they're designated for the Palm Coast Connect cases that are coming in. So we rearrange within without having to add staff.
Okay, and finally, privacy and data breaches. I've noticed Palm Coast Connect is, or not Palm Coast Connect, Salesforce is involved in class action lawsuits in the Netherlands and the UK, involving over $10 billion at the moment, and they just last month settled a class action lawsuit in the United States over a preventable data breach involving one of their clients and 200,000 customers. How much access does Salesforce have to our residents' information and our city's information, and what are we doing to make sure there's no preventable data breaches, or they're not doing what they're being accused of doing in the UK of selling personal information of people to advertisers?
Well, one of the things that, and maybe Reichman can talk about this, is you have public records requests. And our records, if somebody was to ask, I know that we have gotten calls in the past about people asking for mailing lists and stuff like that. Florida statute tells you you have to provide the information if they ask for it. So there's that part.
Okay.
And then there's breach, which maybe you guys can talk a little bit about our software and how we're protected as far as, you want to chime in about how?
So to your question about the security and what the access that Salesforce has with our data, they don't have access to our data. We control access within in-house, and so if we decided, you know, 10, 15 years down the line, there's a better product than Salesforce that's out there, and you know, that's competition, it'll happen at some point, but they are the leaders in the market, so they are going to be the tip of the spear, so to speak, when it comes to securities and things like that. They don't have access to our data. So if we switched over to a different CRM provider, that data is ours. They don't have it. It's not like a Facebook and things like that where it's public. So that's why we do require a login for Palm Coast Connect, because that is the residents' data. They're the only ones that have access to it at that point. But to Cynthia's point, it is public. You can have public records requests, and some of that data, you know, if it's requested, can be sent out. But we don't house personal data in there other than case creations, addresses and names and phone numbers, email addresses. There's okay. No credit card information, social security numbers, any of that is none of that's housed in Salesforce.
No access at all for
no access at all.
Okay. My understanding is though that the email addresses we collect for Palm Coast Connect, anybody can request a copy of that. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's public records requests. That's through any system that we have within the
system.
Not just Salesforce.
I believe there are exceptions to that. There are some areas where somebody's information may be withheld if they meet certain criteria, and that's something that they would have to register.
Yeah, so two clarifications. We do follow Florida statutes in regards to records. I'm not going to play international lawyer. The EU's version of privacy is vastly different. Google's just got fined $2.6 billion, 2.4 billion euros. Oracle's in a $10 billion lawsuit with the EU. Microsoft had their 2001 famous case, and you know, where they were broken up by the EU. So, but we are we've discussed through those issues and feel confident to what the team has said, and that we're following our privacy rules and the Florida statutes.
Thank you.
It's very secure data. I've used it in my previous two companies, which were a manufacturing company, and then my previous company before this was Costa Sunglasses, and we used it to run our operations. Never had any problems with any security.
Well, it was the case not so much in the UK or the Netherlands, because like as Bill said, it's a lot different, their laws. But
yeah.
The U.S. case that they just settled last month with a 200,000 client base, that's why I asked the privacy question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let me add one more thing, and that is that obviously the city's very sensitive to complying with the public records law, Chapter 119. But we're equally protective of the privacy rights that are also contained in Chapter 110. There is a long list of exceptions to public records information that try to protect sensitive information. Just as one example, when you have first responders, a lot of times there may be requests for information, documents, public records that may contain information about their home residence or their home contact information, and there's a specific exception in Chapter 119. So our office works very closely with Virginia Smith, the city clerk and city paralegal, that whenever there is any doubt as to, you know, concerns about privacy issues for public records, that we comply to the letter with Chapter 119.
Thank you.
Councilmember Clufus?
Yep, I would just briefly want to add, I know my internet connection is unstable here, but I just wanted to thank the staff for their hard work, but also thank them for the fact that I feel, as a representative of our local government, that it empowers me to be able to tell people to say, hey, have you filed this with Palm Coast Connect? Whereas prior to that, at the beginning of our first term, I would often have to say, have you contacted customer support? Have you formulated an email and sent it to our representatives for small things? Even things like at the park, Holland Park, when there's a damaged piece of equipment that's potentially dangerous. I just feel empowered as a representative to say, file a case with Palm Coast Connect, we'll get someone out there right away, and we can resolve that situation much more quickly than we were able to do in the past. So in addition to everything that my fellow council members have said, I just wanted to thank our staff for their hard work for making me feel like a more empowered representative of our government. Thank you.
And I would add, you know, this has certainly been a journey. And, you know, when you look at the team that has presented today and using specific case studies within our city, every city and municipality across the state of Florida is different. We have different needs. We provide different services. And I know when I first became elected for four years ago now, the citizens displayed and demonstrated that they did feel disconnected to the city. There wasn't a lot of accountability or tracking or information. We weren't able to make our decisions annually based on data and factual information coming into us. So I think the data, to me, is something that is a critical component of this. It's allowed us to drive more decision-making that's more deliberate. It's an agile system, so we're able to pivot. When you mentioned we had dealt with hurricanes, you know, we've sustained three hurricanes and a global pandemic in the last 4 years. When I first became mayor, the hurricane was not run on Palm Coast Connect, and our call takers were over at our EOC sleeping in cots, fielding calls, and our first responders, our public works, every department and division was around the table trying to serve the citizenry in a way, in a very stressful environment, a stressful time. So I got to see sort of the before and after, and knowing that afterwards you have our fire department now going out and automating if trees are down and they're assessing an area after a hurricane, and it's going automatically back into the city to go to public works to then go out there and clear those roads so our first responders can protect our residents. And safety is always a priority for us. So I'm grateful for watching how this has started to where it is today. And it's also about the resource-driven exercises by our city manager to now say, are there areas of concern that we are seeing from our community that we need to address? When we have an issue with garbage pickup, we now know that it's a serious priority and our residents are feeling a sense of frustration. So I know Cynthia has been able to take that information and then go to our waste hauler and say, we have an issue here. We have assessed fines based on that data for non-collection and non-pickup in certain neighborhoods. And so I think our resources have been driven a lot more productively, deliberately. Obviously, the users that are using it feel a sense of ownership, which is great. Our public works department. I love the fact that work orders and technicians are now out in the field and have a lot more historic data and background at their disposal to communicate that with our residents and to be able to respond to them in a manner and at a rate that heightens and benefits our customer service experience. So I think it's been a great thing for our community. I'm excited about what you're able to build within the system and add on to it continually. And I love that each department has been engaged with this process as well. So I'm surprised, Matt, you didn't tell the toilet paper story of the global pandemic. I know. But it's an important one because I think it demonstrates what you had to do.
I'll tell it really quick. So because I missed a statement I wanted to make, was part of the challenge when we started looking into customer service a year and a half ago was, and it's still our driving question today, how do we treat every citizen as an individual? No one wants to call and be a number. No one wants to call and be the random, explain my problem 9 times because no one knows what's going on. So how do we deliver that individualized, exceptional service to each citizen as if they were the only citizen that we're dealing with that day, and multiply that by 90,000 people? And that was through technology, and you'll hear it say everywhere, with technology successful when it's seamless. When I'm using my iPhone all day and not even realizing I'm using it for everything, it's successful. So that was our goal. So early on, one of our prove outs, which people may not have heard the story, the city has a lot of facilities, and we rapidly closed those facilities because of COVID, as everyone was doing. And we found ourselves with 600 rolls of toilet paper. One of the most common cases we were getting on Palm Coast Connect for a short time was, please help me, how do I get a roll of toilet paper? I'm disabled, or whatever the story was. And we were able to connect that dot very quickly because we could see real-time citizen concerns. And we rallied the distribution network. It didn't take very long. We gave out 600 or 700 rolls of toilet paper. We scrounged them from every facility to a lot of our elderly, a lot of our aged, or a lot of our homebound residents. And it was a tremendous win in how we're technology, not just for the sake of having technology, but how we're, again, trying to use it every day to literally connect with our residents and solve problems, whatever the problems are, from a pothole to a down tree to a roll of toilet paper to, you know, how do I connect in my community when the community center was closed or those things. So it was a phenomenal win in a small way.
Yeah. An interesting case study. But however, I mean, you know, again, it speaks to the power of the solution and how we're utilizing it within the city of Palm Coast. And again, going back to that decision-making process. So I'm very appreciative of the work of the innovation triangle team. I think it's very innovative what you've been able to do with pep tanks and alarms and being able to track that and understanding if there are issues beforehand. Our technicians out in the field were driving from one end of the city to the other end of the city every single morning, just responding to different calls for service, and now they're able to use the technology within, you know, geofencing an area. So you talk about efficiencies. That is a great example of an incredible amount of efficiencies. And everything going back to how long it's taken to close a case. You know, so it's those areas of improvement within those departments that our city manager is able to take and now do an analysis based on the actual input that's coming into the system and driving those resources even further. So thank you very much. I know, Cynthia, you were from the beginning very excited about this, but to know that you've been an employee with the city for 16 years and I will say, I've been in City Hall where our call center, those employees are the first line, and oftentimes it can be from calls from residents that are frustrated about a certain issue, and they're not always as kind as we would like. So I think from what I've heard and the feedback I've heard is this gives a line of defense also for our city call takers to say, yes, Mr. Smith, we saw you called four days ago. This is tracking your case. Someone is going to be out there resolving your case. And it provides a level of communication that we didn't have previous to that as well. So thank you. And thank you to all the employees that have been involved and engaged in this process. Okay. Matt, does that conclude the presentation?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Wanted to take that opportunity. Obviously, we're looking at the next agenda item, and we had planned this presentation a while back, got derailed, but we really wanted people to understand at least from our perspective, what we're doing and what we believe the successes have been.
Thank you. So we'll move to agenda item number F2, which is a resolution approving the Salesforce licensing agreement with Carisoft Technology Incorporated.
So thank you, Honorable City Council. We did, in 2018, City Council approved the purchase of the licensing for our citizen engagement portal, which hopefully now everyone has a little better understanding of what we're doing with that portal. And it is also known as Palm Coast Connect. It's time for renewal of our licenses, and with that, in the last fiscal year budget, the budget we're currently in, we anticipated and budgeted for an increase in cost for some additional licenses for functionality, now that we know the platform is working extraordinarily well in producing cost savings across the organization. There is a desire to expand our usage and capability a little bit, and we have Steve here today to kind of introduce what we're doing, why, and where we're going with this request, budget request to increase licenses.
Good morning, Mayor and City Council. Doug Aikens, IT Director. Pretty straightforward request. As you've seen the presentation of Palm Coast Connect, as Mr. Morton has said, we're up to renew our licenses. Several departments have requested to expand additional licenses to expand the solution in the organization, and we're requesting overall purchase of $175,797.50 through Carisoft as the reseller to procure these licenses.
Council, any questions or comments? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to agenda item number F3, which is a resolution approval of the CDBG Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report for the program year of October 1st, 2019 to September 20th, 2020.
Good morning, Council Members. Ray Tyner, Deputy Chief Development Officer. As Jose's getting his presentation up, we've been part of the CDBG program since 2012, and Jose gives his presentation, I think, every single year. He's elaborated a little bit on it to give a little bit of background, a little bit more history on the program itself for his presentation. New members as well.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Vice Mayor, members of City Council, Jose Papa for the Community Development Department. Annually, we about this time every year, staff provides a report on our activities through the CDBG program. As Mr. Tyner mentioned, we'll provide some background on what that program is for the benefit of our new council members. So basically, my presentation will include the background of the CDBG program, and the action item, which will go to your next business meeting, is really the acceptance of that annual report, also called the Consolidated Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. So the CDBG program is a federal program that started in 1974, and it's there to provide funding for housing and community development. Any activities undertaken with the CDBG program must meet one of the following national objectives. And one is that it needs to benefit low and moderate income persons. You know, currently, and that varies from region to region, here in Flagler County, City of Palm Coast, our area median income is $65,600. That's for a family of four. So in order to qualify for this program, the threshold, the maximum threshold, is 80% of that, which would be $52,500. Another national objective of the program is that an activity must be to prevent or eliminate slum or blight. And thirdly, CDBG dollars could be used to address an urgent community development needs that arises from an emergency. If a hurricane was to come and there's some emergency needs that might need to be undertaken, such as a failed weir or roofs that have to be repaired, CDBG dollars could be used for that activity. The program itself lends a lot of local decision on the programs and projects that must be funded. But again, within those, whatever those programs or projects are, they must meet one of the three national objectives, that is to benefit the low moderate income person, or to eliminate or prevent slum or blight, or to address an urgent community development need. As Mr. Tyner mentioned, the city has been an entitlement community since 2012. What this means is that on an annual basis, the city receives a block of funding from HUD. Typically, that amount has ranged from about $450,000 to $500,000, which we use for the following activities. Some of the example projects that CDBG funds may be used for include housing-related activities, whether that's to provide financial assistance for homeowners to repair their homes, or in the case of some municipalities, first-time homebuyers program. Public services are another activity that qualifies for CDBG funding, and that's limited to 15% of the grant, although that limit right now has been waived due to COVID. So youth and senior activities, homeless assistance, those are some of the type of activities that are funded through CDBG. Again, other examples, economic development, whether that's to assist. Again, with economic development, there's the qualification of having to meet that the beneficiary would be, again, would qualify under the low moderate income category. Infrastructure improvement, that's one that the city has undertaken as part of its CDBG program. Again, and for infrastructure improvements, that if you are to have an infrastructure improvement, it must be in a qualified area, and that's based on the census. And that's a qualified area would be a census tract that has greater than 51% of its population as low moderate income. And finally, CDBG dollars may also be used for the planning and administration of the program, and that would be limited to 20% of the allocation. Under the CDBG program, there are a couple of documentations that need to be completed as part of the overall program. There's something called the 5-year consolidated plan. And basically, this is a 5-year outlook on the city's strategy of meeting goals that's related to providing decent housing, providing a suitable living environment for its residents, and expanding economic opportunities. And typically, that also outlines, in general, what those activities might be, whether we intend to do an infrastructure project. It doesn't have to be specific, but it just identified that that's something that the city could potentially do as part of a CDBG program, or a housing-related activity, whether it's a first-time homebuyers program owner-occupied activity. And finally, the annual action plan. This is the one that's brought to council every year, usually around the June-July timeframe. And this describes the actions that will occur over the coming year, what we intend to use the allocation for that year, and what activities we intend to pursue. If for those council members who are in June, I believe July of this year, remember we identified that we would continue with our housing rehabilitation program. We would set aside funds to create a mini grant program for our nonprofits, and also to set aside a certain amount of the funds to continue with the administration and planning of our program. Other documents that are necessary include an assessment of impediments to fair housing. That's usually done in conjunction with the 5-year consolidated plan. And then finally, why we're here today, it's the consolidated annual performance and evaluation report. It's an annual report of the accomplishments over the past fiscal year, and that's really all it is. So here in the city of Hollywood, city of Palm Coast, where did that come from? Sorry. I used to work for the city of Hollywood years ago, 13 years ago. I apologize. The city of Palm Coast, the main activities we've undertaken using our CDBG funds mainly have been the infrastructure project for Seminole Woods, where we completed that neighborhood multi-use path. A majority of it was funded through CDBG funds. We continue to have our housing rehabilitation program. Again, this is one where we provide financial assistance to owner-occupied homes who qualify income-wise to low-moderate income households. And through that program, we've been able to assist homeowners with things like replacing their roof, replacing a water heater, replacing their AC unit, and if, let's say, their cabinets are damaged and need to be replaced, that could be covered as part of the program, too. And finally, public service activities. And we continue to provide summer camp through our Parks Department and offer scholarships to students who qualify, who come from low-moderate income households, to attend summer camp with no charge. And in the past, we've also provided an allocation to the Flagler County Free Clinic, which they use to expand to a dental assistance or dental care as part of their program. So in past year, the activities that on which CDBG funds were used for included housing rehabilitation, including its administration, public service, again, our summer camp program, the youth activities, and also the planning and administration. So under the housing rehabilitation program, including administration, we completed 10 homes over the past year. Coming up in this current round of homes, we have about 20 homes that have started or are pending. And some of that is pending due to a delay by COVID. In the past year, the expenditure was $224,000. That was at the end of federal fiscal year 2018, which actually covered the period right before this fiscal year. But the completion of the work with those funds were done within the recently completed fiscal year. And also our public service, our Parks Department was able to provide a summer camp this past year, and 37 students were able to take advantage of that summer camp and able to access that summer camp for free through the use of CDBG funds. And finally, we need to monitor and administer this program so that we continue to meet the requirements of HUD in terms of reporting, income qualification, and monitoring to make sure that funds are being expended in a judicious and administratively in the correct manner. And so about $19,950 was used for that activity. So over the past fiscal year, we have a total of $260,950 that was used for CDBG entitlement program. Continuing on, as I mentioned, we're now in the new cycle of the housing rehabilitation program. It's ongoing. We're waiting for the funding agreement to come from HUD for the federal fiscal year 2020 funds, which we'll use in our fiscal year of 2021. And then, of course, the public service grant program that's also pending funding agreement from HUD. And right now, we are in the middle of continuing to qualify households for assistance, for utility payment assistance. Again, this is through the use of a special allocation from HUD called CDBG-CV through the CARES Act that provided for about $300,000 to the city, and we are using that again for utility payment assistance. And we're still in the middle of that program. As required by federal statutes, this annual report was made available on the city's website for 15 days for public comment from November 19 to December 3. And no comments were received. And as required by federal statutes, our Citizens Advisory Task Force, which is the advisory board for CDBG activities to City Council, held a public hearing on December 2nd, 2020, and recommended that City Council approve the annual report. And there were no comments from the advisory task force about any changes that needed to be done to the annual report. And that concludes staff presentation.
Council, any questions or comments? Thank you, Jose.
Thank you, Mayor.
Agenda item number 4, which is a resolution approving an option and ground lease agreement with Diamond Towers for construction of a telecommunications tower at Palm Harbor Golf Club.
Thank you, Mayor, City Council. We have staff Doug Aikens here to present, and we have Dan Turnpaugh from Diamond Communications to walk you through this agenda item.
Good morning again. Going to this item, I wanted to give you a brief history of how we got to this point. Over the years, city staff has heard the concerns of citizens who want to increase the wireless coverage in the city. There's a lack of coverage and capacity of cellular communications in the city, and as a result of that, the city engaged a consultant, Diamond Towers, to help us come up with a plan of attack of how we're going to increase the cell coverage in the city of Palm Coast. To that extent, in January of 2018, the city adopted a citywide master plan in order to increase coverage and capacity of wireless facilities inside of the city. In that master plan, 10 areas of coverage were noted in order to target those areas to increase the coverage in those areas. And inside of those 10 coverage areas, 29 individual properties were then identified as properties to be developed on. The point of the wireless master plan was in a way to affect quickly getting cell towers up in these areas. Typically, to put a cell tower up, they would have to go through a special exception process. The city would have to then go before the planning board. Public hearings would have to happen. And in effect, with the wireless master plan, city council pre-approved these 29 areas for a cell tower to be put up. So what the developer needs to do now is to submit a permit application and, of course, get a ground lease for the property. And that is what is here before you today. So I just wanted to show you briefly. In the wireless master plan, these are the 10 areas of coverage that were identified. Over here in area 7, there was a single property that was indicated, and that was the Palm Harbor Golf Club. And here you see the area they're looking at putting the tower is right here behind the maintenance buildings. So at this step in the process, there is a standardized ground lease that has been worked out between the city of Palm Coast and Diamond Towers. We've had, I believe, 4 of these ground leases brought before city council before, or 3 rather. I think this is the 4th one. And each ground lease is the same. And that is the request that is before you today. And I believe we do have Dan Turbaugh from Diamond Towers here if you have any additional questions.
Council, any questions or comments at this time?
I just have one question. I went by the site, and I just want to make sure that trucks, maintenance, and every other truck that goes in the back to unload, there are 2 trailers there yesterday. I just want to make sure that when this site is built, if it's built, that will be enough room for the trucks and other traffic to go by next to that tower and be able to go and help our maintenance thing. That's something that engineering would have to look at and make sure that, you know, if this site gets built, to look upon, okay? Thank you.
I believe that would be handled through the permitting process, yes. But you're talking about the road right directly behind?
I went by because I want to see the height of the trees that were there and what if there was any problems, and that's my conclusions out. They're looking at the site.
I do have one question concerning the height of the trees. Will this tower be visible to the residents in that area?
I haven't seen the heights of the trees myself. It's a 150-foot tower, so I believe it will be.
Okay.
How close is the closest house to this?
I believe 300 feet.
Questions or comments at this time?
One other, I guess.
Okay.
I think we are all CC'd on an email from a Mr. Lou Vitale, who lives in the area and who owns a company. I just wanted to mention, I've known Lou for about 1.5 years, just an acquaintance, but I've known him by reputation for many, many, many years. Lou Vitale was a senior engineer at the NBC television network, and that was the first network I worked at, and he had a stellar reputation as an engineer. And I see that he's offered to do a free, some sort of free, what did he call it? I'm not that technical, but it was some sort of free analysis of this plan for us. And I would kind of like council to consider Mr. Vitale's offer, since he does represent residents in that area through his Protect Palm Coast organization. And I would just like to toss that out there, that we might want to consider tabling this until January, when Mr. Vitale will be back in town. He's currently in Virginia, I understand, at his company.
Okay, any other questions or comments, council? Okay, seeing none. Thank you. That concludes agendas items. We will go to agenda item number G, which is public participation. For those that have spoken at the beginning of the meeting, this is only for those that have not spoken, have the opportunity to speak at the end of the meeting. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin.
Dennis McDonald. Mayor, before we start, could you put that last map up of the neighborhood this gentleman had up there so I could show you all something? Because Mr. Rucchino asked a very good question, and there are a couple other good questions that kind of tie right along with it. Okay, so can you blow that up a little bit larger and show us more to the south? Okay. And more to the east? Okay. Just expand it so we don't have to see the neighborhood. Is it okay? Okay, that's great. So if you look at that right there, this is the gateway from the east side of Palm Coast. When you enter Palm Coast, this is your first impression. And you all ask great questions about the height of the trees and whether you can see them and such like that. When you come over that bridge, it's one of the highest points in our city, okay, you're going to be looking at a 150-foot tower. So may I suggest, Mr. Rincuino, and everyone else, this is, you're going to see this thing. Put up a 150-foot balloon from this location and see what you're going to look at every time you go over that bridge and you come into Palm Coast. Is that what you guys want to present for our city? And along with the fact that there's going to be IG equipment on this. I just wanted to tag on to what Lou had offered. Lou has equipment and people, personnel, heading to Florida with that equipment now. I understand there's going to be an analysis of not only this site and its present condition and what is there, but also, we're going to take a look at all the other cell tower locations in Palm Coast and give you a read on all of those so you know exactly what's going on there. The other interesting thing is yesterday I asked Virginia to send me money on the contracts that we get from these locations. Now, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions here, folks, because this is government, and I'm not used to working with government, but every one of the totals of these reports that I have are negative, large negative numbers. Now, to this resident, large negative numbers mean only one thing, okay? But I'd like to have the city manager at some point, and it doesn't have to be today, I'm asking not to have it today, tell me whether or not these are really negative numbers that are here. So, one last request on my time. Could you please have the manager, city manager, get to me all of the licensed cell towers in the confines of the city of Palm Coast.
Okay, thanks
so
for
that
your comments.
We can
thank
have
you.
We know exactly what the FCC number is.
Thank you,
thank
for
you very
comments.
Much. And you did not give me any extra time when you were putting that back up on the screen. Thank you.
Thank you for comments. Next speaker.
My name is Celia Buglisi. I'm a resident of Palm Coast. First of all, I want to congratulate the mayor, Mr. Klufas, for being reelected, and there is a good reason why all of us voted for you. I want to also congratulate the new council members elected, and I hope you all work with Mr. Branquinho for the preservation of our quality of life, safety, and pursuit of happiness with our investments in our homes in Palm Coast. I want to, first of all, say thank you to the city, especially to Mr. Flanagan from the city utility. I don't know where he is. And because he's very responsive, he have cleared up for us, and the city is watching and monitoring that an issue that came up with the sewer on the Island Walk entrance to Florida Park Drive is being monitored by the city, and it's being repaired, it's being taken care of, but further issues, the city is on top of it. Thank you very much to the city and Mr. Flanagan. Also, I want to appreciate Mr. Matt from the head of Public Works, because he's doing a very good job, very responsive, and they have straightened up the sign, finally, of our street name in the corner of property. Also, I want to appreciate Heather, please stop, which is your city animal control, for her compassion and time that she spends rescuing loose dogs, saving their lives. There is a lot of animals that get loose, and we have people working here, and this we have to say thank you to her for her compassion. Also, maybe in the future, we need to appreciate one of our residents, Caroline Delgado, that puts her time and money helping any other area around Palm Coast and everywhere else, rescuing dogs that escape and they can be killed by traffic. Those are people that are working every day. She works for no money and puts her own funds. One of the things that I want to ask respectfully our council is to consider the site of that 150-foot tower. Maybe you can find at the same performance another location, because I see it will be on the opening gate to Palm Coast over the Hammock Dunes Bridge, which we have such a beautiful site now. And also will be in that location too close to our neighbors and friends in the Oaks and Covington Park. So respectfully ask our city to please check for another location. That's all, and I hope the city continues working for our quality of life. Thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
This is
that to Virginia. Next speaker.
Thanks, Celia.
Close public comment. We'll take it back to this council. Discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. Vice Mayor Branquinho.
I just have to one thing. It's right now we have over 40 city employees out with related COVID matters. And I would like to finish my comments today with please, 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 citizens, everybody out there, wear your mask when you're out there. Wash your hands thoroughly and keep social distance, because we're losing people like there's no tomorrow. Please, if we could, by doing this, save one life, it's worth it doing it. And by the way, I hate this mask. I hate it. Just to put it in the record. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. Vice Mayor, or Council Member Klufas.
I have nothing for this meeting. Madam Mayor, I will be returning as of this upcoming week, so I look forward to joining you all in person, and thank you for again.
Thank you very much. Council Member Barbosa.
Can I ask you a question about the cell tower?
Yeah.
I've seen in other cities they put these towers that look like trees. Is this something like that, or is it just a steel structure?
It's a steel structure monopole, I believe. Previously in the city, the ordinance was that they had to have a flagpole-type tower up, and the ordinance was changed when the master plan was adopted because many of the providers would not come on a flagpole, so we had to do a monopole style with the arrays on the outside. So that was specifically changed to accommodate carriers coming into the city.
Well, is it going to look like a tree? Or
it looked like a typical cell tower, a single pole with the antennas on the outside.
Councilmember Danko.
I have nothing further. Thanks.
I have nothing at this time. Discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda.
Nothing, Mayor.
Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
Not today, thank you.
Okay.
I make a motion to adjourn this.
Thank you.